I'm so happy to have Cindy Ratzlaff today. I'm going to read your beautiful bio for 2 seconds just to give people perspective, picked up right off of your website. So for those of you who don't know Cindy, I came to know you by way of author, digital media, digital marketing in the author world. So I'll circle back and tell you more about how I became Cindy's fangirl. But Cindy is a passionate brand evangelist, a keynote speaker, a marketing strategist who creates award-winning marketing campaigns for publishers, authors, entrepreneurs, and businesses. She's developed campaigns for 200, oh my God, that hurts my stomach, New York Times best-selling books. She's appeared on national television programs, ABC, Good Morning America, The Today Show, and your essays on marketing and happiness. I found one of those yesterday.
Oh, good. I'd
love to hear more about those. Have been featured on Oprah, CNN, and Business Insider. And I'm just honored to have you here on my little Facebook Live world, and joining me in terms of just, you know, chatting all things digital media, marketing, what you've seen over your time doing this. But I discovered you at the Book Expo at one of your awesome speeches 6 or 7 or 8 years ago.
I've done 7 years in a row. I love speaking at Book Expo because I love talking to authors.
I love it. So I remember the first time I saw, I came away. I think I might've gone up and be like, hi, Cindy, I'm Nancy. But I walked away, I was like, that's what I want to do. I like her job. I like what she's doing. But your speeches are always, you know, your talks are awesome. And the reason I love them is they're not the fluff. I have yet to hear you speak where I don't walk away with 10 actionable items that I can either implement for my business or for authors that I work with. So
good. That's my goal. I mean, what's the point? Time is really important to all of us. And if a speaker or a webinar or whatever we do can't give you something that you can take away and use right away, they kind of cheated you and wasted your time. And I don't ever want to do that to anyone.
Well, I agree. I think with social media, it's hard. And you know that, you know, you give a talk and as you say, I could spend a day on Facebook.
Yeah.
I could spend a day on Instagram, you know, and or I can tell you what you should do, but not tell you how to do it. And you're one of the few people that actually tells people literally how to do it. You know, so we're very thankful for those of us who have heard you speak. So, I've sent you, you know, the questions, but the behind this, the whole premise for behind the scenes is really to just sort of, you know, we all go and see bestsellers. We see them with thousands of followers or we see them with fascinating Instagram campaigns. But the purpose of this conversation is really to sort of know what goes on to make those happen, as well as what's changed. And I think the other thing that's interesting for you and me is keeping up and what's changed, because probably what we're going to talk about is what works now, not the same as what worked even a year ago.
Yeah.
So I think that leads into like my first question in terms of what's the biggest game changer you've seen in terms of either growing an audience for you or your authors in the past year? You know, the biggest kind of shift or something you're doing completely differently or, you know.
Yeah. Just recently, the biggest shift change is the new algorithm on Facebook. And so it's, you know, I hate to start with something that makes people feel a little despondent. But what happened is, you know, a lot of this stuff tied to what's happened politically,
right.
And a need for Facebook to service their shareholders and to keep people on the platform and not have people leave. And so what they've done is at this moment, and here's what I want people to know, take a deep breath. Facebook changes all the time. This change will not be the end all be all of changes. There will be more changes. So if this change is suppressing reach on your pages, there are a few things you can do to get it back up. It might not ever get back up to the heyday, but it's not worth abandoning. I really believe that. I think it's still a remarkable free way to meet, to reach a larger audience than you would be able to reach without advertising.
Right.
So there, with that caveat of take a deep breath, here's what did change. Facebook decided that the kinds of posts that broadcast, that just give out information and then move on and then give out more information and then move on, are no longer desirable to the fan base. I don't fully agree. I think some people follow pages because of the information they get. But, and they decided to downgrade the value of likes on a post and even downgrade the value of shares on a post, which used to be the holy grail. You really wanted to get shares because every person who shares a post of yours potentially shares it with, Facebook estimates, about 165 other people,
right,
who might see it in their stream. So shares used to be the golden child, and right now comments are the golden child. The average person, when they're using Facebook and sees something of yours they like, puts an emoji into it, a heart, a GIF, is some sort of an emoji to let you know they read it and liked it. Facebook is saying that's not real conversation. We want authentic conversations. So when you want to get higher reach, or at least the reach you're able to get for your page, you have to pay attention to what Facebook cares about at the moment. So at the moment, Facebook is heavily invested in you having real conversations with other Facebook users. So say you're someone who posts tips or strategies or tools. Post the way you always would, but then you're going to have to invest either money in advertising or time in conversation. Now, for me, I prefer to invest time because I don't want to spend a lot of money in Facebook advertising. Ultimately, I think that gets me people who aren't truly interested in what I want to say or truly interested maybe in my services. I want people who are having authentic conversations with me or invested in my brand. So this fits right into my own personal strategy for how I use Facebook. So yeah, that all sounds a little bit convoluted, but what it means is post something, end your post with some sort of call to action. Not something as obvious as "what do you think," but but something that just says, I might say, I've found recently that I'm struggling a little bit with reach. So when I use videos, my reach is higher than it was. Are you experiencing the same thing? Tell me about your experience. And then people start to, because what you're doing is you're going back to the marketing holy grail, which is, what about me? Your customer or your consumer or your potential client is always there because they have a need. So as opposed to you asking them to service you by having a conversation, you invite them to be serviced by you through, let me know what you think. If I can help, I will. You know, you have to pose your questions in a way that makes them say, this conversation is worth my time. I have a Facebook page for a book I wrote called Queen of Your Own Life. Okay. And on that page, I post it's an affirmation that we create every day, my writing partner and I. And what we've, up until now, we've had anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000, sometimes 7,000 likes a day on each of these posts, and hundreds of, you know, comments, et cetera. But when the new algorithm came, we were struggling to get to 1,000 likes every day. So it was a huge depression in reach or suppression in reach for us. So we've been experimenting over the last 2 weeks with every other post saying something very personal about what the affirmation was. So if the affirmation was something about forgiving yourself so that you can move forward and live your best life, underneath the post, I will write a little something that just says, we've been struggling with this week. You know, everyone has things that they're in the back of their minds that are holding them back, that when they, you know, when it pops to the top of their mind, they go, oh, you know, and they just can't get past it. If there are things in your life that are doing that to you now, let's make today the day that we just toss them to the curb. And so just by opening up and saying, I have this experience, we gave permission to people. We got 1,000. We got 1,000 conversations that day, which was double the number of conversations we usually get, because shared something personal. So we were really authentic, and it was, they were clear, they were talking to us and with us. And then we subtly invited them to share their own, and people were talking about what they can and can't forgive themselves for. And it turned into a powerful conversation that not just back and forth us and the one person, but us and the other people who have also liked the post and are following the post. It turned into a massive, really productive, interesting, creative conversation. And our reach that day was also double the reach that we've had in the past couple of weeks. So we're trying to do, I think we don't want to do that every day, because I think that is exhausting for people. Sometimes they just want a quick hit of happy, right. And they want to move on. But whenever we open up and say, I have this, I wrote this for myself so that I could encourage myself, others, that gives other people permission to talk to you. So how could we do that in a business way, or in a, and for authors, maybe for authors who write fiction, or for small business owners, everything? That's what we have to find, is the voice that allows us to invite people into a conversation. And at this moment, that's the most important thing for Facebook reach.
And a couple of questions. One, when you were talking about regular reach, is I typically say to people with organic reach, and what that means is not paid, right? Like, where you're not paying, you're not advertising.
Yep.
You would be, you're lucky if you're getting above 10, okay, 20 would be great percent of your typical like. So you, yeah. I mean, is that, I just think to give people a perspective, if they only have 1,000 likes that they're reaching, you need to know they're reaching. I mean, I think that's still shocking news to somebody that they're only reaching, you know, a 10% with that reach. And so what you've said is very powerful about how you get back to that, you know, breaking above what the normal average is, because that 10 to 20%, I think, is trending back down to 5 and 10 with the new algorithm changes, yeah. Right?
And I think here's the, if you have a smaller page and your reach has dropped off to where one or two people are seeing your post, you know, it can feel really depressing. You may have to put $10 into it. You may have to create a post that you think, most of the people who follow me are going to be pretty interested in this. And boost it, put $10 behind it, just to get your people back on your page. And any time you choose to advertise at all or pay for reach, you need to have backed up in your strategy 3 or 4 quick posts that will come over the next couple of days that are also equally fascinating. So it doesn't, if you pay to bring them there and then they don't come back, you know, for a couple of days, then you've paid for, you know, nothing. You paid for one time pay-per-play.
Right.
So you have to have this strategy of, they came for this because this tip, strategy, or tool was great for them. I've got 3 backed up, and I'm going to tell them right here on the page. I'm going to be posting about this for the next few days. So if you don't see me in your stream, you know, pop on back.
Right. Riding the wave, so to speak, of that, you know, making the most of that.
Exactly. Because I have such a big page, if I'm reaching 10% of 340,000, it's still pretty good.
Right.
But if you're only reaching 10% of 1,000, you're struggling.
Right.
And so it's really about making sure that you may have to jumpstart it with a little bit of money, and it doesn't have to be a lot.
Right.
Really, $10 will get you, you know,
yeah, especially with a smaller page.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't even expecting to go into all that wonderful strategy, but I think we got 4 nuggets out of there already. We've talked about Facebook, so I don't know if this is going to be your answer, but what are your, and again, this can be on behalf of you or your clients, but what are your favorite social media, either platform or network, you know, is, mm-hmm. And one may be one for your clients and one may be different for you. So I'm curious to hear kind of both of those answers.
You know, I started on Twitter before I started on Facebook. So I was on Twitter for a full year before I joined Facebook. And so I love Twitter. But I find that these days I'm using Twitter less for business than I am for news. It's evolving into a news platform where I can get breaking news, updates, you know, everything that's going on. So I use Twitter. I create lists on Twitter.
Love lists.
I love lists. And so I create lists of journalists whose information I want. I create lists of social media influencers whose stuff I like to watch. I create lists of book authors and what, so that I can look at what they're doing. And every day I'll you know, filter the stream and just look at the tweets of those people and decide if there's anything I want to read, share, retweet, like, comment on. And so I'm spending less time on Twitter than I used to. But I'm still growing rapidly on Twitter. It's because I think the people who are using Twitter are there purposefully for a purpose. It's not a Facebook. You can be kind of wandering aimlessly about looking for cookie recipes and, you know, right, baby pictures. And it's a great place for that. I do that just like everybody else does. Where they're not necessarily coming to Facebook for strategy or actions. They do if they're, you know, if they're marketers, they do if they have a purpose and a reason and they know where to find you, they know where to find me. But on Twitter, people are, I personally think, at least the way I use it, is that people are going there for a purpose. So I have a purpose with my, you know, with my lists, and I filter the stream and I look for the information that I want. And I almost use it as a trend finder. And sometimes I'll write about things that are hot on Twitter, on my blog. And so it's, for me, it's more of a tool about where are the people, you know, what's going on. Also, I like to tune into Twitter for breaking news, because if I'm about to launch a program or a webinar series or something that's paid and that's marketing related, I want to make sure there's no late breaking news that's cataclysmic. Because I don't want to be, you know, marketing a tool or strategy or technique webinar when the nation is in mourning.
Right.
And, you know, it's horrifying that we have to be thinking about that these days, but we do. And so I use fewer automation tools than I used to because of that, because I want to make sure that I'm being sensitive to what's happening.
And Twitter is about to make some changes as well. That's for those, you know, for those who do use automation, they're about to come down and make some changes and not let, you know, not let automation be such a key part of posting.
Right.
Is my understanding as well.
And I don't know if you've noticed this, but I think I had about 47,000 followers on my Twitter feed, and there was a, you know, there was a, like a bot cleansing.
Exactly.
That Twitter did. You know, from a foreign country. So I'm now back down to around 45,500. And so it was really interesting to find out how many people were following me who, and I don't care about that because it's not the number that's important. I want the people who are following me to actually be interested in what I say.
Right.
So if, you know, if 500 bots are following me, good riddance. Thank you, Twitter.
People
should not be panicky about that. If they see that they've lost some fans, they probably weren't real people.
Yes. And I think my two cents on Twitter, I think is similar in that, well, and especially for authors and thought leaders, it's important for, you know, for them to be there, but also to engage with other ones. So as you said, it's very purposeful. It's you know, it's with intent. I think typically it's not necessarily the place where you're going to get a lot of a different audience, or it's where you're necessarily going to build your tribe, but it's kind of where I find, I say to people, you need to be there to sort of be in the conversation, you know, with your peers and your influencers, versus Twitter's probably not where you're going to find new readers, you know, it's going to, so, and for some clients, it's not even worth it. You know, it's just, it's, as you said, it's a bit of work, you know, so if you only have to go into one or two, then, you know, they look at me, they're like, what about Twitter? And I say, it's a lot of work. You know, you have to have a very serious intent to be there.
On the plus side for Twitter, I have to say that I have been able to, you know, actually connect and then schedule interviews with some very high profile people through Twitter by connecting with them, engaging with them for a little while, and then being able to DM them and have them respond to me. So I was able to relationship build with some people I wanted to interview on Twitter, and that was remarkable.
Yeah, exactly. For that reason, I'm very happy to be on it and stay on it. And I think that's another reason a lot of people do love it, especially in the journalistic writing world. You haven't talked about Instagram, so I'm just curious how Instagram is. And again, for people who deal with people who have lots of words, mm-hmm. I'm finding that there's this struggle of like, well, I don't know why I would be on Instagram, but I think you and I have opinions about why they should. So I'm curious to hear what your take is on Instagram these days.
So I would say that Instagram is also changing. Instagram would very much, and you know, Facebook owns Instagram now. So Instagram would very much like you to convert your personal Instagram account to a business account. I have not done this yet, but I've been doing a lot of research on it. And for one of my accounts, I think I'm going to convert it to a business account. And the reason is that Instagram is rolling out a new set of tools for businesses if they convert their account to a business account. Some of those will include being able to purchase something directly from a picture. So if you sell something, if you have a store, you want to be converting your account to a business account, and you'll be able to tag things within your photo that will link right to the store where you can buy them. That said, I use one Instagram account for my Queen of Your Own Life, for my book, strictly for imagery and you know, it's very visual, and we're getting Instagram and Pinterest are the two highest referral websites for traffic to our Queen of Your Own Life website now. It used to be Facebook and Pinterest, and now it's Instagram and Pinterest, far outweighing. So people in Facebook are staying within the atmosphere of Facebook and not leaving, not clicking out. Right. Whereas people on Instagram and Pinterest, perfectly happy to click out and see what's going on.
Right. And I think, and I've said that too, I said the trend is, it's, and I think you and I came from the day where people could grow very quickly on Facebook. We've just addressed that's not happening as now, but the growth in Instagram is still where you can capture some organic growth in your audience without, you know, the same effort and energy you have to put into the other platforms. It doesn't mean you don't need to have a strategy, but, you know, I see people who are, especially authors who have just sort of, they're dipping their toe in, and they suddenly, just because they're of a certain level of, you know, recognition, people want to follow them. And they're like, how did I get 250 or 500 followers and I'm not really posting? I said, because they want to see what's going on in your world. They want the behind the scenes look. They don't, you know, they do care about your taco. Sorry.
Absolutely correct. If you are, I'll just use authors for an example, because I do work with a lot of authors. So if you are an author, you create magic out of nothing as far as the average person is concerned. The reason they're following you have a mystical ability to create something out of your imagination, and they're in awe. They want to see behind the scenes in your world. Because they're attracted to your creativity. And so when you show them pictures of your dog who sits on your desk while you work, and pictures of the, you know, your famous, your world famous corned beef and cabbage, and they get to see your tablescape and, you know, the snow on your porch and things like that, they feel like they know you. You've invited them to be your friend. So Instagram can be very intimate, a very intimate behind the scenes experience with an author. And if you treat it that way, you know that what you're doing, you're inviting your fans into a world with you. This is something that Taylor Swift does really well. She makes those fans feel like she knows them and they know her.
In an authentic way. I mean, I'm sorry, but
it's brilliant.
That I think is what's going to resonate throughout all of this is the authenticity. I was going to, you know, one of the other questions was, what are you doing differently? But that, I mean, I think that may be, but I'm happy if you could to sort of continue on that conversation about engagement looks different now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so talk to me more about that. And you touched upon the politics, but why, how that's affecting what we're doing.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on in social media other than what we want to talk about. And it's important, and it's alarming, and it's impacting the way people feel emotionally. It's creating situations in which suddenly you can have a crisis on your hand because you misspoke or used a pronoun in the wrong way or offended someone where with a phrase that you never would have dreamed would have offended them. And so there's a, while being cautious and I mean, while being open and authentic and stuff, we also have to be cautious of the new social norms. And it's tremendously, people are on edge. They are sensitive. They are anxious. And as leaders on social, which we're trying to be through our, you know, our engagement and our strategy, I think, in my opinion, it's our job to calm the conversation down, make it a safe place, give people the information they came to you for, and curate the conversation by, you know, sadly, I've had to block and throw out some people who, you know, have their own agenda for what the conversation should be about. So that's new. I haven't had to do that since I began social media. I don't think I've ever blocked anybody as much as I have in the past maybe 6 months.
Yeah. And it's you bring up a good point, because what I've actually seen happening is sort of two different directions. One, people who had tried to just sort of keep it sort of safe and be, you know, be a persona to all people got to the point where they felt like they had such an audience, right? They had such a following.
They had to say something.
And so that, you know, conversation was before Christmas with I think AJ Jacobs and us, and we talked about it, and he blatantly said, or I commented, I said, I noticed you've sort of, and he said, yeah, I had to do it. And he actually said, I had to take my stand. I had to draw the line. He goes, you know, not to inflame, but I had to take a stand. And he said, did I lose followers? Did I lose some of my tribe? Absolutely. He said, but I had to do what I had to do. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there are those of us, and I mean, I think I would be in that camp where I'm clear about how far I want to go, but I'm, as you said, sensitive to, very sensitive to things being out of, taken out of context.
Yeah.
Or people who may be one extreme or the other, being very careful about the choices, you know, I make so that something isn't misconstrued, or that something, you know, that somebody else, you know, does or says isn't misconstrued. So it is fascinating that we've kind of had, I don't use the word dividing line, but the action it's caused people to take.
Yeah. When I was at Rodale Press, we had a corporate philosophy about disagreement. And it was a little bit, it was very formulaic. If someone disagreed with you in a meeting, you were required to say to them, that's interesting. We see it differently. Tell me more about how you see it so I can understand your point of view. And even though that's very clunky, and at the time it always felt very awkward to do, it's been ingrained into the way that I work now. So if someone disagrees with me, I'm able to, or they say something that I feel is inflammatory or outrageous, I'm able to step back a little bit and go, you know, wow, I really need to understand how you got there.
Well, that's interesting. Pause. I mean, it's true. And if the whole world would do that, imagine the common humanity would be on. Holy moly.
Oh.
I know we've touched around different spots, but I don't know if you sort of have a super secret that, you know, that helps you connect with your tribes. We've talked about the big picture of authenticity. Yeah. Are there literally some sort of ninja things that you're doing, you know, to support your sort of authentic approach of engagement?
Sure. On my Facebook page for the book, I post every morning at 6 o'clock, at 6 o'clock Eastern time. And my writing partner's on the West Coast. So from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock, I have coffee with Facebook. And so I sit down and I talk back and forth. I'm there. I ask people how they're feeling. I respond to their comments. Some of the people have been coming back so long that I sort of know things about it. I can even ask them about their kids. I mean,
wow.
it's really because just a few, not everybody, but there are a couple of people who I go, you know, how's your son doing? And, you know, I know that's been a struggle. And so I'm able to really have conversations. And why that's become so important is there's this pervasive sadness that I'm feeling in the world, is bleeding over onto my page, which is about happiness. And so some people are coming over there who genuinely need a little bit of uplifting. And so I almost feel like the hour I spend from 6 to 7 drinking coffee, where I'd really just be watching, you know, CNN or Morning Joe's
Twitter feed, or
that I'm putting a little positivity out to the world. And by doing that, my secret is I'm there. I put in the time. This is what I believe all fans want. They want to be seen and heard. So when they post a comment to me, I always say back to them, you know, Debbie, you know, I use their name, you know, Debbie. And that's my secret sauce. You know, Debbie, I hear you.
So good about that. You were so good.
It feels so good to them. And it feels good to me. It makes me really makes me see them in their comment. If someone says, oh, I wish I could never do that, I'll write back and say, Debbie, why? I believe in you. You know, I think you can do this. And sometimes it just is magical.
That's so powerful. And it sounds like also in terms of just for tigers, as opposed to doing that, which I'm sure you're also doing on your blog, you're doing it on Facebook, right? So as opposed to developing the community on your blog, where I know some people just sort of have built, you know, same thing. They blog every day and the same 100, 200 or whatever, 300 come in and, you know, they have their own. So you're doing that, you know, on Facebook every morning if you're sort of whatever it is you're posting and engaging.
And in fact, one of the changes we've made is we're not blogging as often. And we're not sending out our newsletter every week like we used to. We're sending it out once every 2 weeks. We're doing less on other platforms and doing more on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook.
Interesting. That's very powerful because I think one could make the argument right now that, you know, Facebook is in control of the feed, so why spend all that energy? And you're working with that to make it work versus running for the hills and saying, well, shoot, I'll just have to be on my own.
And in fact, I've started to use notes as a blogging tool. So the notes on Facebook, on a Facebook page, I took a sabbatical from Simon & Schuster. Ultimately, I decided it was permanent and I have retired. So I wrote about this.
Rewired, not retired. Rewired.
Rewired. So so what I did was I started a blog through notes called My Grand Sabbatical. And once every couple of weeks, I sort of updated people on the changeover, like what it was like to let go of kind of a big job, right. And then take the time to rethink, what do I want next? What's my next act? What matters to me? What lights my fire? And that's been very powerful. And I've decided that I'm going to repurpose some of those now for LinkedIn. I also do a lot on LinkedIn with SlideShare. So each platform can take the same kind of information as long as it's reworked for the platform. So when you've created this great content, you can think about how you can use it on different platforms. Like for Instagram, it's just, you know, people want how-to and they want inspiration. But for LinkedIn, LinkedIn Pulse. Do you remember LinkedIn Pulse was their blogging platform?
Right.
And it's still there, but it's harder to find. But when you do find it, if you blog for them, you have the opportunity to be picked up by what they call their weekend reads, which go out to 8-9 million people. So if LinkedIn picks up one of your long blog posts, it has to be 1,000 words or more.
Look at you. You're still dishing. Look at me. I'm like 1,000 words or more. Look it up.
Yeah,
okay.
A lot of words. Okay. I mean, it's a significant excerpt from a book. It's a you know, it's a statement piece.
That's right.
So if you have something to say that's really important, it's on a topic or it's a how-to or it's a opinion piece, putting it on the LinkedIn Pulse platform is a good way to, you know, potentially be seen by millions. And so I've done that a couple of times this past year, and I've done it for two or three of my clients to much success.
And Cindy, just to clarify, I'm going technical, but is the Pulse platform different than publishing an article? I want to make sure I understand, like, you know, because I've advocated for people that as you're reaffirming,
they publish articles, yeah.
LinkedIn, and that's one of the first things LinkedIn will show you if you look at somebody's profile, their activity. So that's another reason I've been encouraging people to sort of say, you need to actually not just have a perfect profile, you need to be engaging. So
publish an article, yes. And it is the same thing, the publish an article, they used to call it Pulse, and I don't think they call it Pulse anymore, even though their URL is Pulse.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, I've been pleasantly surprised at how quickly, again, that's one of those places where if you're fighting over in Facebook to be seen, if your audience is appropriate, LinkedIn is actually, and I'm still also constantly amazed how many people say, why would I be on LinkedIn?
Yeah.
And I said, I don't care who you are. Unless you're trying to hide, you should at least just.
You should at least be there. Especially if you are a nonfiction writer or a business writer or even a small business, I think you should be staking your claim in thought leadership on LinkedIn.
Right.
There are other places too. For example, if you were a fiction writer, you might like to have a Medium account.
Yeah.
And you know, Medium is really a perfect place for writers to blog. And it's the same kind of thing. You have the opportunity to be seen by many, many more people than you would be seen by, say, on Facebook.
Yes. And I think, I've seen people use Medium for things that are kind of off topic.
Mm-hmm.
What they typically, you know, sort of, you know, me for this, but I'm practicing getting my voice over here on this, or this is the side of me you might not know, but I didn't want to throw it in over here. Yeah. So come check it out.
Like at Finance User, we used Medium to share excerpts of books that were coming up. So if an author wanted to, you know, maybe wanted to put the first two chapters up on Medium and share it with people pre-launch to give them a taste of what they're, you know, what the book is about, and then share that link to the Medium page on Facebook and on Twitter and, you know, on LinkedIn. That's so that, great. You know, if you want to read an excerpt from my book, I posted it on Medium.
That's such a great strategy. That's awesome. We've talked about sort of stats and you know, I think you and I both agree, but I'd love your take on, it's less about quantity these days, but I'm still hearing that when people go to try and get a book published, one of the first questions they get asked is, how big is your platform? Right?
Yeah. Yep.
So I again say to people, it's much more about quality and engagement and authenticity than numbers. And they look back at me and they said, yeah, but somebody said, how big is your platform? So
so your platform isn't just the numbers on your Facebook following or your Twitter following. We all should be thinking about ways we can quantify that for publishers who don't have the, you know, who are really overworked, overburdened, and might not have the imagination to see what your reach can be. So, you know, you do need more than a social following these days to impress a publisher. You need to have maybe you've booked yourself on a blog tour and you've been interviewed by 15 blogs in the last year. Those interviews live on forever and they reach X. So take the time to go back to those bloggers and ask them what their monthly reach is. Add that all up and, you know, explain how you've done that and show them in the marketing part of your proposal that you're going to do that again, that you made new contacts from doing that and you expect at publication time to be able to reach 100,000 people through these 15 blogs that have already agreed to have you back. Now, same thing with podcasts. Podcasts are hot right now. Publishers are paying attention to them. And so being able to say that I've been on X number of podcasts and or I'm going to be or I have my own or, you know, the podcasts have these number of downloads to them. Those are the kind of stats you can use to supplement when you're trying to talk about your reach. The other thing that people overlook is, do you have any corporate contacts of companies you've worked for in the past, big or small, who might be willing to commit ahead of time to buying 500 of your books to 1,000 of your books to give as gifts to their employees because you're a former employee and they're proud of you? If you can do that and you can go to a publisher and say, I have 5,000 copy buyback right off the top, suddenly you're way up the list in terms of authors that they're interested in because they can see that you're connected, motivated, and doing the kinds of things ahead of time to market your book that will make up for the fact that you have 1,500 Twitter followers.
And not quite the same as the buyback, but the baby step there might also be if you've got speaking engagements lined up at sort of national, you know, not just the local Chamber of Commerce, but at the national level.
Even the Chamber of Commerce's would be, you know, I speak at 400 Chamber of Commerce's over a 5-year period or something like that. If your numbers can be big, or say, you know, a couple of years ago, I spoke at 3 out of the 4 women's conferences in Texas, Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania. So I was able to say there were 10,000 attendees at each one of those who heard me speak because I was a keynoter. So, you know, I had the ability in that year to reach 30,000 people and did a book signing after each one of those talks at the conference. So being able to demonstrate I have done this in the past, my plan for the year of publication is, you know, is also a platform. So don't be too worried if your social platform alone isn't enormous, because publishers are actually fatiguing on those stats. And they're realizing that you can have 100,000 followers. That doesn't mean they're going to buy your book.
No, that's very true. That's very true. I love your creative thinking on approaching how to think about the size, the quality and the size of the platform in a very different way.
I mean, if you had a platform that, if you had the ability to sell, you know, you knew for a fact 7,500 people out of all the people you know and who follow you and who book you for speaking engagements and stuff are going to buy your book, someone's going to publish it.
Right.
They're just going to publish it.
You're in. Before we talk about disconnecting, I'm curious on your take, because this is one of those things where I'm seeing a trend, but I personally wish I wasn't seeing it. And I love your insight, and that is this move to Messenger, the bots, and texting, and, you know, getting in front of people on their text versus email, and all of it kind of makes me personally cringe, because just hearing about that you are present in the morning and fully engaging and it's real, I have a hard time, you know, saying, well, you have to deal with this. On the flip side, I have a sister who's a bookseller, right? And I said to her, okay, I love that you're running your business out of your Facebook Messenger right this minute, but we need to automate a little bit of that just to sort of free you up. So I can see the purposes of it. It's a push me, pull me. I'm curious of what you're seeing or what advice you're giving.
I would say, you know, I would say approach bot use cautiously. I like Dressbarn. I just like them.
Confessions from Cindy on Facebook.
Every time I go there, I find something I need. So I signed up to get their automated messages. And whenever they're having a sale, they text me. And so I know it's from a bot and everything, but I don't dislike them for it. I can just swipe and delete if I'm not interested. And I they've been doing this now for a couple of years, and I never get rid of them. However, I have gotten some bots from messages through Messenger from some Facebook pages that I follow. I'm not interested in that. I did not sign up for that. I did not ask to get, very specifically asked to get messages from you, and I have unfollowed those pages. It had a very negative impact on me to be trying to do business and start to get messages from Facebook gurus. I did not like that at all. And I suspect that your fans, you know, all of you who are listening would not like that either. So it would be one thing to say to your fans, I'm going to do a tip of the week and it's going to go out via bot through Messenger. If you want this, Right. I want to put you, you know, I want to make sure you get this, but you have to let me know. I don't want to spam you. So let's talk about how we can make that happen.
Yeah. That's wonderful counsel. And I think the same thing. And I think the people that originally, as you said, showing up in your Facebook Messenger unsolicited was, I can't prove that, but I would say it's Facebook showing to them how easy it is to do.
Yeah.
Suddenly a few things are showing up and I'm like, oh no. I have a couple of clients who just said, I want you to just turn the whole thing off, or set mine to say, email me.
Yeah.
They're not, they're on Facebook, but they would much rather have, these are people in politics. I'd much rather have a conversation with you through email and not, here.
My total robocalls. They're so offensive because you have no way, you can't communicate with them. They're just going to blast their message to you.
No, it's a little crazy. Well,
I'm hoping that trend will go away.
But having said that, I've also been in the world of the mantra, you have to get them on your list. You have to get them on your list. Well, what list? Email. And I'm now having a take back of, okay, there are some people that may be okay with hearing from you through text, as you've just pointed out, in a different way. So, if it's done well, that tip of the day of, here are your 10 tips to check your Facebook page is okay. To me, I start going, it's just one more thing I have to check or do. So I think, again, also knowing your audience is huge. So Cindy, this is all amazing techie stuff that you and I love and nerd out on. I do know that you step away from the computer and the phone. So I'd love to know what you do when you're not on Facebook and when you're not helping your clients, or I'd love to hear more about your sabbatical or what's even next for Cindy in terms of telling us where you are and what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm focusing a little more on speaking these days than on client work, and that's been pretty exciting. And I'm traveling a lot. And that's how when I travel, I really disconnect. I mean, I don't, that's not entirely true because I'll Instagram my food just like everybody else. My beautiful vista from my, hotel room kind of thing.
Meet up, wish you were here.
Yeah, glad I'm here, But when I travel, I want to be with the people I'm with. I don't want to be checking email. I don't want to be checking anything. So that's my disconnect is travel. When I fly, I don't connect to the Wi-Fi. I read magazines.
That's because you and I are magazine people, and it's our guilty pleasure. You're like,
I do. I just People magazine and see what's going on.
I don't care that I spent $50 at Hudson Booksellers and bought four magazines.
I know, and I feel a little, I feel good about shopping at, the store at the hotel. I mean, at the airport, Hudson News, come on, good for you.
We got to keep magazines alive some way. So my biannual trip to the Hudson Bookseller to like junkie up on trips. And Cindy, like I said, I'm eternally grateful. You are always so full of, just in our conversation today, I think I've heard well over 10 strategies, tips, everything else. Where can we tell people to find you we can post a link after this of your events, but where would you most like people to find you and stay in touch with you that are just new to you and all your great help?
So my Facebook page, where I post tips and strategies about social media is facebook.com/CindyRatzlaff. And that's for my business and that's where I really nerd out and talk about social media a lot.
It's a great page. I highly advocate it.
Thank you. And then if you want to look at and see examples of how I put my strategies in motion, you can go to facebook.com/queenofyourownlife.
Nice.
And that's my big Facebook page, and that's where I'm experimenting all the time. Because I have such a large fan base there. So anything that's new, we have not done Facebook Lives there. We've been posting video directly to the page, organic video to the page, occasionally, and that works really well for us. But the engagement strategies I talked about earlier, we're practicing there and, with tremendous results. My website is cindyratzlaff.com. You can go there and lots of tips, tools, strategies. And thank you for asking.
No, oh, on my Twitter.
You can always tweet me. You can get me. You can really get me and talk to me on a daily basis on twitter.com/brandyou, Y-O-U.
Got it. I will include all of those links in here as well as, and if you have an events list, I personally would love to see where you are, because we've talked about not seeing you at Book Expo, but wherever else you're going to be, just in case people are lucky enough to see you, because your speeches and your talks are always so helpful.